Legally Blonde. Written by Silent Walrus. Read by Opal Song. Fandom, Full Metal Alchemist. Rating, teen. Category, gen. Also tagged for post-canon, if you're into that. Pre-slash, if you're into that. Edward Elric, real fake blonde. And Roy Mustang, denser than bricks. Part 4 of the Caveat Emptor series. Roy hires Ed as a contractor a month before the spring semester ends, which is a time frame he is forcibly informed of via the 20 minutes of complaining that precedes the actual request. And since May's here, she and Al started a whole study group, and there's people in the apartment at all hours, and they're all crazy, because it's exam time and medical students are insane, Ed concludes. Like, saw through the roof joists, grease up the rails, totally batsy poo. What have you got for me? Roy tells him. Yeah, Ed says after a long moment. Yeah, I'll come in. Roy doesn't actually see Ed in the office until 2 weeks later, because it's a busy month by default on top of everything else. Quarterly budget meetings, council sessions, and the new mandatory bi-monthly research reviews for state alchemists, of which he does technically have to review himself in order to approve the continued validity of his own license. Self-dealing or no, he still has to complete the paperwork for it. And that means it's Havoc that confirms that Ed's started work. And reports, grinningly, that he showed up looking unusual, and that Roy would see for himself. Roy does see for himself when Ed comes into the office for the first of his own meetings. My goodness, Roy says automatically, not bothering to halt the spread of his smile. Trying a new look? Ed rolls his eyes with his whole face, his familiar huff not blowing his bangs out of his eyes on account of them being pinned back with a surprisingly severe row of hairpins. Get fucked, he says conversationally, hefting his crate of files off his hip and onto Roy's desk. I lost a bet. Roy's smile can only widen. To your hairdresser? Fucking May, Ed grumbles. She and Al cheat like assholes. They're fucking nightmares. Let's just get this over with so I can go home and take the pins out. I mean it. Get your pen out, bastard. These fucking itch. Roy is unclear on what exactly the wager was, as Ed is unwilling to say. But the terms are that May Chang gets to style his hair as she pleases for an entire month. She must not consider her victory a vindictive one, however, because on the surface it seems that her entire goal is making Ed's hasty ponytails and scruffy braids into something presentable. Of course, she could be lulling Ed into a false sense of security, but he looks sufficiently harried by the introduction of the braided bun into his life that this may be punishment in itself. That would mildly surprise Roy, because while it's not quite accurate to call Ed vain, he does express a very particular set of preferences in regards to his appearance. Ed scowls only half-heartedly when Roy raises his eyebrows at the most elaborate look yet. Four separate braids, an impressive amount of pins, everything scraped up high and away from his face. He growls. They're both up to their ears studying. There's exams every day this week. They say it's stress relief.
Styling you like an unfortunate show poodle.
This is the better option. Trust me, Ed says darkly, from which Roy infers that Alphonse and May have well and truly proven themselves suited for a medical career by casting off whatever pretense of human pity they once held and embracing the true nature of medicine, i.e., unending horror and chaos deeper than what mankind thinks can be known. It's a bit of levity that isn't unwelcome, at least, given the ongoing nature of their daily meetings. Ed is going through a recently uncovered cache of classified Bradley-era alchemical research and summarizing his findings to Roy at the end of every day, usually late enough that they've both given up and either found takeout or gone searching for dinner. The content is routinely depressing, occasionally nauseating, and wholly ungood. Ed is mowing through it with the cheerless determination of one who knows the end is in sight and won't drag the misery out for himself a second longer than he absolutely has to. Roy has been paying for the dinners, partly to staunch Ed's whining, and mostly because Ed's summaries are sparing Roy a lot of time, headaches, and likely more than a few nightmares. Major Ross's people found the cash, and she personally kicked it up to Roy. And given that Bradley's regime, well, all of them, but Bradley's especially, was characterized by deliberately engineered alchemical worst-case scenarios, he is not letting it get so much as a door guard that he hasn't personally vetted. When Ed shows up at his door on Saturday morning with a thick stack of files and a grim, "This is the last of it," Roy readily lets him in and lets it eat the next 3 hours of his weekend, knowing that they'll be free of this come Monday. Roy doesn't have the breadth of experience to do detailed dives on all of the uncovered files himself, but he's good at determining what needs to go in which category, and with Ed there identifying what's dangerous, it goes at a fairly steady clip. They end up with three piles. Code and hide, archive and bury, burn outright. And Roy prepares his fireplace for a good old-fashioned document disposal, as Ed finishes taking down the coded list, noting what they're burning. Having some kind of paper trail is important. The cache itself proves that, even if much of its contents is speculation on applications of chemical warfare, the development of death at scale. There's more than just weapons research in here. There are plenty of records of human experimentation on prisoners that'll have to be relegated to Mace's people to see if they can hunt down any next of kin. It's not as though they'll get the full truth, but with a paper trail, it can be determined whether the person was officially declared dead or simply missing. Closure isn't nothing, even if, in the grand scheme of things, it's a pittance, the very least of what they can do. As Minister of War, Roy has jurisdiction over the defense research labs and the entire state alchemist program. Under Bradley, the post was General Ravens. Until Grumman appointed Roy, it was held by a succession of three deputies, none of which were eager to keep the position given the public uproar that had them and the Ministry of Culture, propaganda, working all hours to keep people from rioting across the whole country. The whole "every single person within Amstrian borders died for a minute" thing was, not to put too fine a point on it, not well received. Either the state had fucked up and lost control of some kind of new super weapon, which was bad and incompetent, or they had set it off on their own people on purpose, which was worse and malicious. Amstrians are raised on a steady diet of bullshit from birth, but anyone with half a brain knows the reality of things. The government can and will screw you sideways for anything it damn well wants, especially if it finds your screwing convenient, and everyone fucking dying is more than legitimate grounds for panic, even if it was only temporary. The official story, sold by the military to the civilians, was that of a mutual mystery. A big, "we don't know what happened either, but you can be damn sure we'll find out." It was even mostly true, given that the actual number of people who understood what happened were quite small. The official accounts are that the insurgents invaded the military labs, and something went wrong. Something big. So big it caused that massive crater in the parade grounds, obliterated the labs, and killed pretty much anyone who might have seen what happened. The demand for answers has slowed down since the initial rush, but the official investigation is still ongoing, and some of the more above-board lab research from the Bradley regime has slowly been released piecemeal to the public. Most of it is still classified, and will likely stay that way for decades. The disclosure goal, after all, is to reassure people that the disaster wouldn't happen again, that there are no equivalent alchemy projects ongoing, nor will there be, and there will not be a repeat event. Not everyone buys it, and absolutely none of Amstress's neighbors do, but the story isn't going to change. If ever there was a time to disclose that their entire country was an artificial livestock pen, built and run by immortal constructs for the express purpose of mass sacrifice, it was immediately after the mass human sacrifice almost succeeded. That moment came and went. Roy was blind, Grumman wasn't interested, and Armstrong considers any given civilian to have the IQ of cheese mold, even on her most generous day. If anyone wants to tell the truth now, they'll sound like a raving madman at best. And even if the populace did believe, what would it serve? Our country was run by homunculi, whose creation and abilities Roy's pretty sure even Ed and Alphonse can't fully explain. But don't worry, there were only 7 of them. They're all gone now, we promise. What exactly is that going to achieve? Roy doesn't want to live in a world where perpetual lying is the best strategy available when it comes to state-sponsored crisis management, but he works with what he's got. He takes the files Ed hands him, stacks them in the fire grate, and lights it all up. Ed yawns hugely as Roy controls the burn, his jaw briefly cracking louder than the flames. "I'm hungry," he says contemplatively, as he eyes the fire, expression largely vacant in what Roy's come to think of as his standby face. "Food time, bastard." Roy judges the oxygen saturated evenly enough around the crackling papers and ends the transmutation, slipping off his glove. "I'll call for takeout."
"Are you shitting me? There's a whole ass food festival in that park 2 blocks away," Ed says. "Did you know about that? The sign says it's every weekend, April to September. Is that why you live here?"
Roy knows what he's referring to. It's not so much a food festival as an entire fair with several children's rides and attached farmer's market. On particularly terrible Saturdays, he can hear the delighted children's screams from all the way in his bedroom.
"I live here because almost no other military officer does," he says, which is true, and also mildly alarming in the fact that it came out of his mouth. It's not like he can't trust Ed,
But that doesn't give him license to just let random facts come falling out of his face whenever the urge strikes. It builds bad habits. He needs to get a grip. Get his head in the present, on the problems at hand. Not go maudlin about how, of all the things he's working to give Amstress, one of them will never be the truth.
The food there's not bad, he allows. You want to go?
Ed looks at him like he's an imbecile who shouldn't sneeze too hard, lest what's left of his brains come dribbling out.
They have barbecue.
That settles lunch. Roy douses the fire. They leave the house, and he is once again treated to the experience of cleaning out his wallet while Ed woodchippers his way through meat fries, deep-fried dumplings, sauce-sodden lamb shank, and a chunk of honey-glazed pork shoulder the size of his head. Roy, out of some vague, intrinsic nutritional horror, tries to introduce a cucumber salad and nearly loses a hand for his trouble when Ed snatches the cup and buries it in the melee. That turns him onto the vegetables, and the slaughter continues with pickled beets, cubed cabbage, zucchini noodles, and a spicy tomato, potato, something that makes Ed's eyes water appreciatively. Roy resigns himself to providing napkins and avoiding the shrapnel, his own salad cup emptied, and his foray into dumplings completed, despite his distaste for cabbage in pork filling. He watches the frankly unsafe way Ed eats and idly wonders, not for the first time, if his own ambivalence to food is a result of a lifetime of bar leftovers, military academy mess, and soldier rations, or a naturally muted set of taste buds. Could be both, really. Plenty of other soldiers don't mind the cafeteria food, but hardly anyone takes coffee like he does. And Chris drinks hers the same way. Though it's possible, he reflects, that drinking from her cup starting age 9 is probably a major factor in the state of his taste buds today. When Ed mops the last traces of sauce off his face, he immediately turns a predatory eye on the further stalls, the ones that waft of burnt sugar. Now, he says judiciously, dessert. They've only just departed from the picnic benches when a familiar voice rises out of the chatter.
Roy, that you, you awful dog?
Roy turns, face automatically clearing and hands smoothing against the last napkins, before he pitches it into the nearest garbage can.
Eyes, he says, not unpleasantly surprised. Of all the former colleagues he could have run into on a day off, Eyes Soffler, genuinely genial, utterly unduplicitous, easily leverageable, is far from the worst.
Roy!
Soffler pumps his hand heartily, grinning wide as he clasps Roy's bicep and gives it a friendly shake. He gives no indication of having noticed the scars.
And here I was thinking I'd have to go all the way through command to see you. Have you been, my boy?
Very well, thank you, Roy says, smiling back.
Eyes is a big man, expansive in all gestures, and responds well to some slight mirroring.
And yourself?
Excellent, marvelous!
Soffler squeezes Roy's bicep one last time, and then notices Edward.
And who is this magnificent young creature?
Roy feels his expression freeze in place. General Mustang is known to be seen around town with any number of beautiful people on his arm, many of them somewhat younger than him. Edward has his hair pinned up and back in a style that is nothing like the Full Metal Alchemist's trademark tail or braid, but which would be, for example, just the thing for a university student out on a casual outdoor date. The lack of bangs in his eyes has also changed the planes of his face significantly. They are both out of uniform, and Eyes is from out of town. Ed, beside him, has also gone still, head cocking just slightly.
This is Brigadier General Eyes Soffler, Roy says, trying to convey he's mostly harmless and his family controls all the freight transport west of Anthenry with his eyes.
Eyes, this is...
Hi, Ed says brightly.
I'm Ed. Nice to meet you.
Ed has to blink and do a discreet check to make sure that the sun is, in fact, still in the sky and gravity has not abruptly inverted itself.
How do you know Roy?
Ed continues. In a happy, chirpy tone, Roy has heard from him literally never.
Oh, do you work together in the military?
Roy wonders at what point he began hallucinating. There is no way that Edward Elric would pretend to be one of Roy's dates. Or rather, what he must imagine Roy's dates to be like. Just to wind up some military officer.
Oh, yes he would.
Roy is going to strangle the brat the second Soffler is out of earshot. And this pointless airheadedness is not an insult to Roy, but to those he keeps company with. And he's going to make sure Edward realizes it, probably in between rounds of strangling.
Yes, indeed, Soffler says happily, clapping Roy's shoulder. We worked together for a bit in East back when he was just a lieutenant colonel, before he got promoted all the way to Central, of course. Look at him now, eh?
He means it, too. Soffler is the rare man that does not resent some upstart dandy half his age who used to sir him, now sporting a full rank over his head.
It's all thanks to those I've been lucky enough to serve with,
Roy says, mentally unscrewing the whiskey bottle.
How long are you in the city for?
He would have heard if Soffler had been transferred.
Oh, just the weekend. We're here with the girls. Ellen's over with them by the carousel. I'm just fetching the ice cream,
Soffler says happily. Then he winks at Ed in a distinctly paternal way that, were they in a car, would have sent Roy screaming for the handbrake.
A lovely day to be out, if I say so myself. Almost as lovely as the company.
It sure is, Ed says earnestly, instead of drawing a knife and inscribing his initials across Soffler's forehead, which only makes Roy tenser. It's just so nice to be out with Roy. He's always so busy.
Oh, well, of course. He's a state alchemist, you know,
Soffler says, winking at Roy. The man thinks he's doing him a favor.
One of the best.
A state alchemist?
Ed says, his eyes enormous.
Really? But isn't that, like, dangerous?
It's the military, my dear, Soffler says genially. There's always some risk. Don't worry. Roy's very capable, eh? Hero of Ishval.
Wow,
Ed says, doing a reasonable facsimile of starry-eyedness. It's probably only Roy that finds the demonic, mocking glitter in there to be obvious. If he starts saying things like, gosh, Roy might have to take drastic measures.
Gosh,
Ed says, not breaking eye contact.
He must be really smart. I heard that exam is so hard.
Not as hard as I'm going to take vengeance for this conversation, Roy valiantly doesn't say.
It certainly took some studying.
He smiles instead, showing Ed his teeth as he steps closer, and slides a hand into the small of Ed's back, a palm full of revenge.
Is alchemy something you're interested in? I'll show you a few tricks sometime if you like.
Gosh, Ed says again, baring his teeth. Would you really?
I'll leave you to it,
Soffler says, winking at Roy again.
Try the ice cream at that little pink stand if you get the chance. Ellen's read reviews about their shop all the way in the west. I'm off to get some myself.
It's supposed to be life-changing. You two have a lovely time now, you hear?
Soffler has barely disappeared into the crowd when Ed cracks, collapsing against Roy in hysterical laughter.
Oh my gosh, Mr. Big Guy, Mr. General,
he hoots, grabbing at Roy's shoulder. Roy can't think what to do besides steady him.
You didn't tell me you were a state alchemist.
He runs his hand down Roy's chest, unerringly jabbing a finger where the metals sit on his uniform jacket.
What do all these little shinies and color thingies mean? Is that a hero medal in your pocket, or are you just happy to see me?
He dissolves into fresh cackling, which doesn't exactly preclude violence, but doesn't seem to be hostile all the same.
Roy gives in just a little. Now, don't be like that, darling, he says. I'd never be so crude.
Oh, sure you wouldn't,
Ed says, still plastered to Roy's side, snickering.
A big, strong military man like you? Oh, you'd never take advantage.
Roy's not quite sure what possesses him to take two fingers and lift Ed's chin, tilting his whole face up.
Only if they want me to.
He watches Ed's giggle trail off, but the grin not diminish in the slightest, meeting Roy's eyes head on. Roy holds his gaze, evaluating. With Full Metal, there's no delayed reaction, so if he hasn't thrown Roy yet, he's not going to.
You do realize being found attractive is not an insult, yes?
He was being patronizing, Ed says comfortably. He didn't think I was attractive. He thought I was a bimbo.
And you played into his expectations, Roy says, in accordance with what you think of my dates.
Ed's eyes narrow, grin finally fading. He's never been slow on the uptake when Roy's serious. I don't think they're bimbos, he says. I think they're crazy for putting up with you. But bimbos only exist in the minds of those kinds of jackasses. You think I don't know that? You should see Winry work a client when they're being all, oh, you sweet young thing, at her.
Roy huffs in amusement, even as he has to resist the urge to rub Ed's jaw in praise, like he really is the dog he's always half joking about. I hope you realize that should you encounter Brigadier General Soffler in a professional setting, you have set certain standards of behavior for yourself.
Ed takes Roy's hand from his chin, but absent-mindedly, the way he moves Roy's coffee cup off a file he wants or Roy's grip when he wants the cup itself. Yeah, how did he make General? The guy's not, like, bright.
Not everyone can identify flesh-eating alchemy demons on sight,
Roy says, which gets Ed grinning again. He's still very close, chest nearly pressed to Roy's shoulder, and despite the preening, he's still looking expectant. Roy sighs.
The Soffler family are shipping magnates who own the most property in the West after the state itself. Eyes is a reasonable man who dotes on his family and develops a soft spot for any soldier who passes through his command. West could do a lot worse than having him helming things.
Uh-huh. So, who's really running West?
His stepsister, Roy says dryly, who loves her brother dearly and, incidentally, whose temperament I could best describe as General Armstrong, only she prefers it when you don't see her as a threat.
Ed considers this. So she's you, only a lady. Why hasn't she shown up in Central already and stuck a poker up yours somewhere painful until you signed a marriage contract?
Roy rolls his eyes as though he hasn't had to consider certain contingencies for if Clarity ever changes her mind on wanting nothing to do with anything outside of her province.
Luckily for everyone, she lacks what I believe you and Riza refer to as my megalomaniac tendencies.
So she's happy sitting in the West, Ed concludes. And she's good at it, otherwise you would have gotten rid of her. And you're keeping your wifey spot open for, I don't know, Drachma? Whoever Amstress ends up needing a super-duper diplomatic dick alliance with most.
Wifey spot?
Roy manages. Then is briefly overwhelmed by dick alliance. And then the sheer thought of marrying a Drachman. They hunt bears with knives up there and wear fur underwear. He would end up cooked by his spouse on a spit. Yeah, you know, Madam President of Amstress and all. Ed, meanwhile, looks almost like he's about to put his chin on Roy's shoulder and has apparently forgotten all about that conversation they once had in the pool about whether it's even the right thing for Roy to take the Führership at all.
Gotta make sure it's the right one for the job.
There are some things in my life that don't have to be dictated by political mercenaryism, Roy says, more firmly than he feels.
While diplomatic alliance marriages have fallen out of fashion in most places, Drachma is one of the few where they most certainly have not. At least if he does end up having to marry some beferred Viking, he can be certain it'll be for the greater good. Though he's fairly confident that, should things come to that, he'll be able to convince Olivier to take up with a sword maiden, or whatever the hell combat euphemism she'd prefer for marriage. They'd respect her far more than him in any case. Ed keeps looking at him, gaze clear and direct, expression open and blank in that new way Roy is starting to see more and more on him. But you would if you had to. Roy doesn't want to sigh again, but his exhale comes out low and slow anyway. Sometimes it feels like every year of his life multiplies by every cell in his body and combines in his skeleton to make every bone feel heavier than lead. And it always comes on so goddamn suddenly.
Let's not get into the things I would do if I had to.
Yeah, 'cause, like, fucking yikes and all. Ed agrees, but he's stepping back and looking over towards the dessert vendors, releasing Roy from his gaze. Roy feels a relaxation in several minute muscle groups he hadn't realized had gone tight, and he wishes, not for the first time, that instead of a baby face and a take-me-home-to-mama smile, he'd been gifted with a rattlesnake stare instead. He's not sure Ed's aware of just what kind of effect he can have with his cut-glass yellow eyes. If Roy could make grown men feel like they're losing brain cells and perched on a tightrope with one not particularly hostile look, he would be using it to much greater effect. But then again, it's not like Ed doesn't use it. I'll be nice to him, Ed tosses back offhandedly over his shoulder. The Safi whatever guy, if I ever run into him again, since you think he's decent and all.
How magnanimous of you, Roy says,
but it's more or less on autopilot. His gaze is caught by the sunlight dappling over the heavy knot of hair pinned up at the back of Ed's head. There are little wisps at the bottom, escaping the rest to sway in the breeze and tickle over his nape. In this light, his white overshirt is almost translucent, the lines of the black tank underneath visible. Ed makes people stupid. Like now. He wasn't just talking. He was looking for something. And between his sudden debutante act and the subsequent questioning, Roy wasn't on the ball enough in real time to unravel what. He feels the ghostly warmth of Ed's grip on him, the almost press of Ed's chest to his shoulder. Was that on purpose? The idea that Edward has learned how to distract with his body is a terrifying one. Roy can feel where his fingertips raised Ed's chin. He doesn't know the last time he saw someone touch Ed uninvited and not come away regretting it. He has not, heretofore, examined his own growing proclivity for the same. For reaching out, putting his hand on a shoulder, an arm, an elbow. A game, he thought. A mathematically self-contained statement. Teasing Full Metal is fun. It is fun. And Ed doesn't snap and snarl anymore. But he's always bit back. Just hard enough. Just on the edge of severing anything important. And now he grins as he does it. His laughter still open, but only a fraction of what's behind it on show. Like he himself does, Roy realizes. Exactly like. Ed has grown up, and Roy hasn't been watching himself. The answers to what the hell here are not complicated. He just needs to get his damn head out of the fog and use the brains he does, in fact, have. If he finds Ed opaque now, of all people, gods, he really needs to get a grip. You mentioned dessert, he says, distantly, feeling the slightest bit removed from himself as he follows Ed's gaze to what appears to be a deep-fried cookie stand. What can I get you? Ed's grin back at him is a familiar thing, bright and quick and hungry. That, at least, isn't difficult to read. Everything. The end. If you enjoyed this podfic, you can leave feedback at archiveofourown.org/users/opalsong. And from there, you can find a link to the podfic post. And from there, you can find a link to the author's post. Thanks for listening. Author's notes. God, what could it be, Roy? What could it all mean?